but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
1996 NFL Draft. It's kind of a big deal, especially for our next guest. Selected by the New Orleans Saints, first round with the number 11 overall pick. It's a guy, this is a kid who was born in Detroit, Michigan. Went to high school in Colorado Springs, played his college football at Oregon. After his time with the Saints, he went to the Chargers, then to Washington, then Detroit. Now he's got a kid playing in the NFL. Alex Molden, author, speaker, father, husband, friend, is joining us. You can find his work at Alex Molden Speaks. He's got a couple of books out, including his brand new one. We're going to talk about it. Plus, I want to know what it's like to watch kids go through the NFL draft after you've been through an NFL draft. He's joining us now from the mean streets of West Lynn, no doubt. How are you, man?
JC, I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm well. Good to hear your voice. What are you doing on a sunny day like this? Because I got to imagine you're outside running around.
Dude, so check it. I'm outside. I've recently developed this green thumb. And my yard has... So check this. Last week, I ended up having... Okay, let me ask you something. Have you ever thatched your lawn?
No, I have not thatched my lawn. No,
you haven't thatched your lawn. Have you ever aerated?
Yeah, I've done a little aeration. Yeah,
so you did it yourself.
Yeah, I didn't hire somebody to come aerate my lawn. Yeah,
there's no judgment here, but I did that last week. I did the front yard, and I'm starting on the back today. So that's what I got going on.
But you saying you're developing a green thumb. Were you never let's go out and dig around in the ground and plant something? No?
Never that. And just recently, I think once I hit my 50s, I want to start doing stuff on my own. And, man, I just started, kind of taking care of my own grass and cutting it and weeding it and all that other good stuff. Man.
I like it.
I don't know. But it's fun.
Isn't there something different about using your hands? And because I work out in the backyard, and I always feel like it's different than the work I do talking on the radio or writing. You're working and coaching people. You've written a couple books. You've played football in the NFL. It's working out in your yard is different than that. It's different. Gives you a chance to think too, doesn't it?
Oh my goodness. See, that's the biggest thing. I get to get out here. First of all, the weather is nice. I got my hands in the dirt. I have a plan. You know what I'm saying? So just like in anything else, right? Having a plan, like me and my agent at the time, we had a plan of how to get drafted and how to go as high as possible. And so it's the same thing, man. It's kind of following the plan.
Let me ask you, let's go back to your time. You were at Oregon. Here comes the 96 draft. You go in the first round, 11th overall. What was that day like waiting for the draft and then getting the phone call?
It was stressful because you're projected, right? You're projected at the time. I was projected to go from anywhere from pick 5 to pick 15. And so, that's a big gap, right? And back then, I don't know how it is now, but it was, it was 15 minutes. So every team had 15 minutes in the first round to choose. And so I'm sitting around in the green room, you know, and I'm waiting around. It's like, man, pick number 5, come 6, 7. Next you know, I'm in there, and I was number 11. I was in there for, what, a little over two and a half hours.
Wow.
So it was stressful. And you're thinking about, like, man, you know, what am I going to say? You know, the camera's in my face and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, it's just a lot that kind of goes through your mind. And they're just trying to figure out, okay, what city is going to pick me up? Where's going to be my new home?
So you were in there. You're in there, and you've got guys like Jonathan Ogden in that green room, and Keyshawn Johnson, and Simeon Rice, and Reagan Upshaw, another Pac-10 guy at the time, and Eddie George.
Yep.
Did you talk to those guys, or was everybody kind of keeping to themselves with their own agent and their family?
Yeah. It was pretty much, you know, you had a table. And in that table, back then they gave you, so it was you and your agent, and then the NFL would give you 5 tickets, like airplane tickets. Mm-hmm. So you can invite 5, like regular, like seats, right? But if you put people in first class, you only got 2. And so I end up, you know, I brought my 5, so my mom, my brother, had an uncle, and you know, a couple of buddies from high school. And so they came with me, and you just kind of, you know, talked amongst yourselves in the green room. And there was, back then, there was no cell, you know, saying, like, you didn't have a cell phone. You couldn't, like, you know, read anything. You just kind of talked amongst, you know, and then with the other guys, you know, they all had their people. So, you know, you would say what's up and, you know, thumbs up every now and again. But yeah, other than that, you kind of kept to your crew.
And then you get drafted. That had to feel like a relief. And, you know, I want to maybe fast forward, because then you go back through it with your son in 2021. All those years later, there you are, like 25 years later, Elijah's out there. And, you know, he's projected as a second or third round guy. And he goes in the third round. But you guys did that one at home because you're not in the green room. You know, what was that experience? Was that just as nerve-wracking for you because you're just waiting for your kid to be picked?
It was worse, man. like the stress, because for him, his gap was bigger, right? So he was projected to go anywhere from, I think, his agent had told him 35 to like 75 or 85. Mm. And so once you get past that, because he got picked number 100.
Yeah.
So you get to a certain point, and so what it is like the expectation.
Yeah.
Right, the expectation of where you're supposed to get picked and whatnot, and you start to get, you know, your whole world starts to just get so tighter and smaller.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I'm sitting on the side, and I'm like, I'm looking at him, and once you get past 85, it's like, man, I don't know, is he going to get picked today, right? And he was frustrated. He went down there, and at the time, you know, just during COVID, and they gave everybody one of those iPads so, you know, they can have access to see you, you know. Well, he get past 85 and he closed it. Mm. He turned it off. He didn't want, you know, he was upset. And my wife was, you know, in her feelings. And I'm looking at it, I was like, I was like, dude, this is great. This is great because you're expected, you know, whatever picked you are, there's a certain expectations. I know what type of work ethic he has and what type of skill set, and above everything is his football IQ was very high. I said, anywhere you're going to go, you're going to surprise a lot of people. And on top of that, you're going to have this fire, you know, the firewood that people like Tom Brady have, that, you know, teams look past, or they don't think that he's qualified enough. So all these other guys get picked ahead of you. None of that stuff matters once you get picked. You get picked, you got to go and perform.
We've talked on today's show a little bit about how much loving playing football matters or doesn't matter. Guys are getting paid in college. Some of the NFL scouts are saying that they are unsure if some of these guys come into the NFL or in this year's draft, do they love football? Maybe that's always been a question, but some guys are getting paid and, you know, some guys were motivated by money. I'd be curious to get your input. Like, when you look around an NFL locker room, if you took the money away, of course, that takes away some of the motivation, or maybe a big part of the motivation. But how many of those guys do you think loved playing football? And where did the money factor in kind of motivating players?
And you're talking about in today's game? Or
maybe when you were playing, when you played. Let's start there.
Man, it was one of those things that money was never discussed. It was all about the competition. You know what I'm saying? Like competing. That was one of the big factors. Like every day I got a chance to compete against some of the best athletes on earth, whether I'm facing them or they're on my side. And I always wanted to be the best DB. And, you know, early on in my career, I had Anthony Newman in my backfield, and I had Eric Allen, who's now who's going to be a Hall of Famer. And I was trying to be better than him each and every day. And there were some days where I wasn't, a lot of days where I wasn't. So that was one of the big drivers for me. I don't know about, you know, a whole bunch of other people, but, like, I just always, like, the money was never a thing. I know for me, the one, the time where I felt that football became a job was my last year in the NFL when I started, when I was with Detroit, and I've never done this ever before. And on this particular time, I did it where I went and I checked my cubby. I checked my cubby for the paycheck. Where before, and it was a photocopy because everything got sent to my financial, you know, my financial people. And so it was one time I went there and I asked, I said, hey, so when do we get the checks? Other than that, before then, you know, the people had to be, hey, Alex, you got to come. You got to clean up your cubby. Your check, the photocopy is filled to the brim. Okay, yeah, I'll take care of it.
Was that a sign to you? Was that a sign to you?
Absolutely.
That you were like, oh, this is about money for me now?
Yeah, and that's not fun. When you start thinking about, like, you know, every play, because there's already enough pressure with the competition that's, you know, the team that you're on. But then once you start factoring money, now it becomes even more pressurized. And, you know, as far, my advice would be to these young cats, man, play the game and don't worry about the money. That will come and it's going to keep coming, but you got to perform and you got to be willing to compete. And I don't know if there's a lot of cats out there, especially now, you know, you're getting paid at a younger age where you're not necessarily, you know, mature. And you start to think about, like, the money and what it can do. And now it could lead to, like, man, this is a job now. Now, it's a job, but you know what I mean.
Like, yes.
You know, you want to keep it a game, right? You want to keep it a game.
I think it's a great point. I think, is it hard to sniff that out? Could, you know, in a locker room, could you tell, or how much time would you need? Could you do it in an interview? Because I know these scouts and these GMs, they'll meet with players, and, you know, I don't think the players are going to let on in an interview that, hey, it's about the money to me, but they seem to be asking that question right now. Are you motivated by money, or do you love the game? Do you love to play football? Do you think that it would take you time to sniff that out? Could you figure it out in the course of a season, or could you do it in an interview?
It's pretty hard to do it in an interview. But I know one way how you can easily sniff it out is just go to practice. You just go to a practice and see who really loves the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, who really loves the game? And it's not just about the things that the game can bring to you. Watching Jerry Rice or Junior Seau, the guys like that, and watch them practice, man, it was so much energy. It was so much, like, you can, man, that's passion. That person, I don't know how much they're getting paid, but he loves what he does and how they attack practice. And, you know, all the other stuff, they can get coached now. You can get coached to say the right things because, you know, these certain teams ask the same questions. They can get coached into saying that they love the game and it's not about the money. But when you watch them in practice or when they're training, and do they go about their business or do they wait till the lights to come on? That's a big indicator.
We're talking to Alex Molden. You've written a couple of books. You know, you've got The Ultimate Playbook for Athletes. You now have a new one, Breaking on the Ball of Life. You can find both these books at alexmoldenspeaks.com, also on Amazon. Breaking on the Ball of Life. I saw one of your kids posted an Instagram review of it, which was phenomenal to see your kid buying in. But, you know, she was talking about, you know, look, you know, nobody has it figured out. And you've got all these forks in the road. You have come up with this playbook that really helps people not get overwhelmed with making a decision and how to make a good decision, how to follow through, how to unwind a mistake. Why was it important to you to write that book?
Man, it was one of those things that there's so many individuals in the conversations that I've had with my clients, with some of the people, organizations that I speak to, and they come to me afterwards and, you know, they ask me questions. A lot of it deals with like decision making. And so there's a certain information you got to take in when you're making decisions. And even if you got all the information, there's still a chance you're going to make a bad decision. I made some pretty good decisions when I was playing football. I also made some bad ones. And so I just kind of took that framework on, man, why did I make these decisions? And when I did have success, why did I have success? And when I have failures, why did I have failures when I made this decision? And it comes down to like this framework on like knowing who you are, right? Knowing what you stand for and how do you make these different changes in like how you view things or even who you are. So I just kind of put all these different things. And then I did my research. Like, you know, I end up, I know there's a chapter in there where I talked about like people who made incredibly bad decisions, but because they had a transformation, there was fruit that came on the end of it. One is Michael Vick, you know, with his dog fighting, what, a little over a decade ago. And, you know, what he was able to do from that. And now he's a head coach at a college program, at a D1. I talked about Martha Stewart, the mistake that she made, why she made it, but yet what has happened afterwards. So it's not a death sentence when we do make bad decisions. You know, there's a certain way that you need to approach things. And I know there's some, you know, for instance, you know, we got Shannon Sharp. He's in the news this week, right, for the decisions that he made, and stuff has gone public. You know, there's going to be certain things that you're going to have to do to you know, to get out of this. But, you know, it can be done. It can be done. So anyway, I just, you know, I got a lot of questions that get asked of me, and I decided to kind of put it all in a book. And not saying that it's all perfect, you know, but it's a certain framework that you can take that can kind of limit the mistakes when it comes to decision making.
AlexMoldenSpeaks.com. If you want to see the books, the new one is Breaking on the Ball of Life. I encourage you to pick it up. Elijah had an injury at the end of last season, and I know it was scary because, you know, when he goes down, you don't know if it's a knee injury, it's a broken bone. Ultimately, I think I talked to you after, and you're like, thank goodness it was a broken bone. Like, I've never heard a parent say anything like that, but you're right. Like, you want it to be a fracture, not a knee surgery. How is he doing? And it looks like he re-signed with the Chargers, and he's staying in one place, got a new baby, all that stuff. How's it going for him?
Thank you, man. He's doing great. He's healed up. He ended up breaking his fibula like the second to last week of the season. And, you know, when that happened, I mean, we was here at home watching it. It was out in New England. And we watched it, and it was like a pin dropped. Like, all the air got sucked out of the room. You know, my wife, she started, you know, she was fighting back tears and whatnot. But everything is on the up and up for that. He's healed with that. He also had a knee surgery, but it was a minor meniscus. But, you know, he's doing great. So I look at it like this, man. When bad things happen, I'm always looking for what's the positive that can come from it, right? And so for him, like he had a boot on, and then his other knee, he had surgery on. So he's walking around and with a brand new baby. So he's moving around the house also with the rambunctious 2-year-old, and he has a walker. So he's with the, you know, a walker with the tennis balls on the bottom of it. That's how he maneuver. And it's like, man, and I just went there, you know, he asked me to come down and help out, and I did that, and I just see him move around. I was like, man, you're going to appreciate your health so much more once you get healthy. Right now, it's like, it sucks. I get it. But, dude, you're going to have one of your best years, trust me, because you're going to be like a kid who got the best toy on Christmas once you get all the way healthy. So he's on his way, man.
I love that. And, you know, you played for the Chargers, and he's playing for the Chargers, and it's a great place to live. And I think he's got a coach who's probably a fun coach to play for with the right mentality. When you go down and you're around the Chargers, do they remember? Do they say, oh, you know, it's Alex Mullen, he played here too, or have they forgotten?
You know what? There is a couple of guys that are still there, and they worked in the equipment department, and so they remember me, and they think it's pretty cool that, oh man, your dad was here, now you're here. That's pretty cool. But it's only like 2 or 3 cats that really remember me, you know, from back in the day, which is cool. That's cool.
Now, I saw you in the stands at the Oregon State spring game, and you've got, you know, a couple of your kids with you, including Josiah, who, you know, is a defensive back that, you know, everybody's offering scholarships to. He will have a much different experience than you had, or even Elijah had as a college player when he does that. But what was it like for you? Why do you go to that spring game? What are you looking for? Are you just, it's football being played, or did you have somebody on the field you were supporting?
So, yeah, I was, so a whole bunch of things. The weather was great, right? Weather was great. My daughter, she's dating one of the football players, and so we, you know, we like to show support, even though it's with Oregon State, but we still show support, so we went down there for that. And, no, it was cool. It was cool, and, you know, it's football's in the air, right? And I want to, anytime I can, especially for Josiah, is to be able to, like, man, this is big-time Division I football. You know, you need to get used to seeing this. You need to get used to being around these, you know, these cats. And so I'm always like, you know, I'm taking notes. I'm trying to learn as much as I can. You know, the game has changed so much. The athletes has changed. So, you know, anytime I can be around football, it's still a joy for me. You know, it's still, you know, I'm a fan. You know, I'm a fan, and I think I'll probably always be a fan of football. So, it was a good experience. Good experience. And I got to say what's up to your daughter.
I know. You text me a photo. It's you and her waving at me. You know,
I couldn't see. I didn't know where you were.
I was down there. It was too sunny for me, and I was trying to hang out in the shade because of my bald head.
You don't
head.
Wear hats. You,
my bald
you
head.
You
yeah.
start wearing hats.
It's my brand. I don't want to cover my brand up. You know, it's here's the other thing. Did you know Ryan Gunderson, the offensive coordinator, let me call the first play? So I said,
no
look,
way.
Everyone's going to expect run. Let's go play action, all vertical, no checkdowns. I want the ball in the air like 50 yards. And it was there. It was there. You know, he overthrew it a little bit. It was there, though. I told him it'll be there in game one as well, but we'll see.
I'm going to tell you, one of the most, the things that I feared most as a defensive back is you're always like the first play, they're going to try to establish their identity. And typically, like you said, people want to run the ball and show off physical and move people out the way. I wasn't afraid of that. I was afraid of a play action or a double move on the first play. And so look at that. You're thinking like a great aggressive offensive coordinator. Good for you, man.
And I wanted to see Murphy throw the ball too, because that's what we've been talking about for months. What did you think of him?
Yeah.
He's physically imposing. He's big. I know it's hard to tell because they had a lot of offensive line things going on that day. But what were your initial takes on their QB?
Well, number one, man, he has a cannon. He is very athletic. And you just need to, like, in those situations, because he overthrew a bunch of balls, but, hey, it's better than to overthrow him than to underthrow him. And once he, you know, gets because it's different in practice, right, with your receivers and trying to gel and all that type of stuff. And then when you got kind of live bullets, even though they weren't that live, but, you know, it's different. So the more reps that he gets with his, you know, with his guys, and then also, you know, putting some more air on it, in terms of getting some more loft on it so he won't overthrow so many of his guys, I think he'll be fine. I'm really excited to watch him get after it this year.
Draft coming up at 5 o'clock, first round. It'll be exciting to see these guys picked, but we have talked about this. I'll let you go after this question, but we've talked about this. There's going to be a whole bunch of guys watching on TV that are currently on rosters, seeing what their team does in the first round because – you know, if they pick somebody at their position, it may mean there's not a, you know, their time is over. What was that like as a player to kind of watch your team pick and go, oh, they just picked someone at my position?
Yeah. Well, it's not that bad unless the guy that they pick goes in the first round. Goes in the first round, then it's like a blatant, you know, type of deal. And that happened to me my seventh year when San Diego or the Chargers picked Quentin Jammer. And that was just, you know, you think because you have a contract, and it, even if it might be guaranteed, that doesn't mean, like, it's guaranteed. It means that you'll get it, but it doesn't mean you're going to be there. So, it's, you know, if you don't perform, it's a business. You know, I know coaches and GMs and maybe some of the fans think that it's a family. No, it's not a family. It's a business. If you don't perform at a certain level, they will get a younger version of you and place them there to compete against you. And then, you know, depending on how much money's invested in them, they'll win the job. So you have to, like, every year, you have to perform. You have to perform at a very high level. They will get somebody younger and cheaper to do your job. So it's, you know, for young guys getting drafted or possibly getting drafted, it's a very exciting time. But on the other side, for older vets and whatnot, it's not that exciting. It's kind of scary.
Bunch of guys rooting to pick an offensive lineman, pick a wide receiver, pick anything but my position here in the first round. So exactly. You don't have to worry about that first round contract coming into the locker room. Alex Molden, you're the best. To see his books, you can check out Alex Molden's books at alexmoldenspeaks.com. The newest book is Breaking on the Ball of Life. You should probably buy it off the website. It's the best place to find it.
It's 25% discount.
There you go.
5% this week. This week only. Jump on.
Get a deal. You get a deal this week. All right. I appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you.
Anytime, John. I appreciate you, buddy.
All right. There he goes. Back to his lawn, thatching his lawn, aerating his lawn. I love that he said, I've developed a green thumb. You either have a green thumb or you don't. So he's always had it, probably. He hasn't developed it. It's always been there. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.